Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
We got some sad news overnight. The legendary foreign correspondent Christopher Dickey died in Paris yesterday. During his long career, he reported from war zones and wrote books about the conflicts he covered. He also wrote novels. Chris Dickey was a great friend of this show. I remember speaking with him 5 years ago about a book he'd just written. It was called Our Man in Charleston, Britain's Secret Agent in the Civil War South. It was also just about a month after a white supremacist murdered 9 black people inside the Mother Emanuel Church in Charleston, South Carolina. And just after the state's legislature had voted to take down the Confederate flag that had flown at the state house for decades. Chris Dickey's insights were so timely, it feels like we could have had the same conversation with him today. So here it is. In July 2015, I asked Chris about the subject of his book, a British consul named Robert Bunch, who was posted to Charleston in 1853.
He went there because he thought it might be kind of a good career move for a young and up-and-coming diplomat. But once he got there and saw the conditions of slavery, he became passionately opposed to the institution. But he didn't tell anybody because he had to make nice with all those people, all those slave owners, all the elite of Charleston. And he did better than that. He ingratiated himself with all of them. All the while, over 10 years, he was writing secret dispatches and private letters back to the Foreign Office in London and to the ambassadors, the British ambassadors in Washington, D.C., and he was telling them exactly how horrible it was and telling them also that the South was going to secede eventually, that it would expect Britain to support it, and that should not and could not ever happen.
So Robert Bunch was essentially a secret agent, and he was reporting what he found back to Britain. How did that influence the way Britain saw the war?
Well, theoretically, Britain was very much against slavery, but it had learned to live with Southern slavery, which raised 80% of the cotton in British mills. Where it drew a red line was about the question of the slave trade with Africa, which had been banned since 1807 by Britain and also by the United States. Slaves had gotten so incredibly valuable in the South by the 1850s that there was a huge push to reopen the slave trade with Africa. And if the South had done that, and there were many people saying that the South would do that, then that would have wrecked everything, all prospects for recognition by Britain. Eventually, Bunch convinced London that no matter what the Southerners said, they were going to do that as soon as they got the chance. And that is one of the things that stopped the British from giving the South the absolutely vital recognition it needed.
And we kind of forget that Britain had a complicated role in the Civil War and that it had a lot of interest, as you say, in the South.
Well, it did. And there were a lot of reasons that the Southerners had believed that, of course, London would back them. London got all its cotton or so much of its cotton from them. And they deluded themselves into thinking that it was a sure bet, that it would be game over as soon as they seceded. But that didn't happen, and Robert Bunch is one of the reasons why.
Let's bring this back to the modern day and the conversation that we've been having about the history of the war. And you've talked about the false histories that we tell ourselves about the Civil War. What do you mean by that, and how does this book address that?
Well, look, Peter, the big false history, and you still hear it argued all the time in the South, is that the Civil War was not, between quotes, about slavery. Oh, hell yeah, it was about slavery. Here's exactly how it happened, and you can tweet it out. The South seceded to protect the institution of slavery, and the North went to war to stop secession. That is how the war started. Eventually, by 1863, it became a crusade against slavery. But it wasn't in the beginning. But had there been no issue of slavery, there would have been no war.
Mm. So what do you make of the controversy that we've been having over the Confederate battle flag after the shootings in Charleston, South Carolina? You're a son of the South. What do you make of all this?
Well, I think people totally misunderstood and misunderstand what that battle flag has come to represent. When Robert E. Lee, whose battle flag it was, surrendered at Appomattox, that battle flag was furled and the war was over for him. That flag came out again with a vengeance as a reaction to the civil rights movement, starting in the 40s and building through the 50s and 60s. That was the flag not to honor the Civil War dead. That was a flag to say no to civil rights. It was held up in defiance by white people, for white people, in memory of people who didn't die, for the most part, defending slavery. They were sucked into the war by the elite slave owners. But once the war was started, they were dying to defend their homes and families, they thought. That's what they were dying for. But the flag, that's all about racism.
Chris, I want to ask you then, is there a way that we can appropriately honor the memory of the Confederate war dead if the battle over the Confederate flag is seemingly lost in South Carolina?
Well, I think, first of all, we do have to understand that hundreds of thousands of men and women died in the South in that war because they were led into it by an elite that was protecting its own very narrow interests, using its money, its power over the press, its power over the courts, its power of propaganda generally to do that. And then I think we have to say, were those people complete fools? No, they were deluded like people who were led into war all the time. Many wars, even wars that have been fought in the last few years. So I think we just have to say, look, they fought bravely. They died bravely in many cases. They died for the wrong cause. But we shouldn't insult their memories just because some racists in the 1950s and 60s wanted to wave one of their flags.
So in that case, would you say that some sort of monument would be appropriate?
I think many of the monuments are. I think you have to look at them individually. Some of them are not. Some of them are erected to generals, for instance, who were really reprehensible people. But in fact, I think most of those small town monuments to the Confederate dead throughout the South should stand where they are.
This is all very personal to you, this history. Your uncle Tom used to hunt for Civil War shells and cannonballs, and you made a film about him. And at the end of this film, we see him defusing an old shell, which, by the way, is very dangerous work, some 150 years after the war. And he lights the powder, actually. Let's listen to some of that.
I do worry about it some, because if this house caught on fire, it could do a lot of damage around the neighborhood. You'd hear the last shots fired during the Civil War.
That is quite an image. But you're still hearing the last shots of the Civil War. I guess, in a way, it seems appropriate, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, because we're still hearing in different ways the last shots fired in the Civil War. In one horrible way, we heard those shots fired in Charleston a few weeks ago. No, I think that my Uncle Tom was a charming guy, but his view of the war was all about armaments and munitions and being a collector. The real view that we have to have of the war is that it was fought for the interests of a very small group of people protecting their right to own slaves. And a lot of people who otherwise would not have been killed had to fight and die in that conflict.
You know, 150 years after the war, though, it seems like a very long time. I mean, what do you think? Will it take another 150 for those shots to be silenced? Or what does it take in the South for the legacy of the Civil War to – will it ever go away?
Well, I think the reaction to the murders in Charleston certainly is – a turning point in the way people think and talk about these issues. It can't be addressed casually anymore. It's not a half joke anymore. It's not an old man with a gray beard and a Confederate cap waving the flag saying, "Forget hell." No, it's not that anymore. I think we've had to look at it very seriously. And at the same time, I think we have to recognize that the South is changing really dramatically and that the scars left by the war, some of the scars left by slavery, and some of the scars left by the occupation by the North of the South after the war, those are fading now as the South picks itself up and moves on.
Christopher Dickey speaking with me in July 2015. He died yesterday in Paris, where he worked as a foreign editor for the Daily Beast. And Chris was on the show many times over the years. In 2013, Robin Young spoke with him about his father, James Dickey, the poet and author of Deliverance. It was a troubled relationship.
My father and I were reconciled in the last two or three years of his life, and I remember after he died going down to take care of all kinds of details, and he always had stacks and stacks of books around him, and the stacks of books that he had around him in his bed were all books about things that, you know, I was writing about. So,
were you seeing that he maybe cared more about you than you thought?
I was seeing that he was trying hard to understand what I did. So I tried hard to understand what he did. I think we pretty much came to do that by the end of his life.
Christopher Dickey was 68.